everyone. Welcome to This Is Ro, a podcast dedicated to all my fellow nomads out there. On this show, I'll be sitting down with my friends and chatting about how their life stories have prepared them for who they are today, how they're just figuring it out, connecting the dots, and what the roadblocks are on the way to their version of success. On this week's episode, I'll be telling you more about Holland Casino, what it was like working there, and how this job helped me get aligned with where I was supposed to go. And I hope you enjoy. So the year is 2014. That'll be 10 years ago next year. And I told you a little bit about becoming an artist, going to art school, post-grad, and having my dream of becoming a full-time artist just came to an abrupt halt, okay? Somewhere, I don't know how, I got this opportunity to get a really good job. It was a really good job. There are some really crazy stories about cheating and stealing, working together with guests to do all those things. Anyway, so whatever, I get through the process, I get the job. I have always worked during college, especially as a waitress. So to me, that's really, if you know me by now, customer facing, having that job is just second nature for me. The first 6 months were the hardest. I really took it seriously when someone told me, just like, put your head down and just work. Because my parents, who are from that generation where it's like, you have to be really professional and get a professional job. In order to keep that, you have to have a certain persona, right? Okay. So I took it very seriously to a degree where people had an impression of what I was like. Until one time there was like a beach party and I went, total Ro came out and they're like, wait, holy shit, she is entirely different than what she's like at work. Holland Casino is a place where you essentially serve gamblers. We call them players, and you don't gamble, you play games, right? Like you play. But a lot of those people, and I don't want to say all of them, they have like a sense of loneliness where when you come to the casino, you're kind of under one roof. Like you all play these games and you know you lose money and sometimes you win some, but it's really like a strange sense of community. And when you work at the casino, it's very similar because nobody in your direct surroundings understands A, what it's like working all these crazy hours, right? Like I never had a 9 to 5 Monday through Friday. Sometimes my weekend was Monday, Tuesday or Thursday, Friday. And people who work at the casino, it's very difficult and kind of challenging to kind of either uphold the relationships that you have outside or like meet people or date even. So that's how people end up dating each other at the casino. Really, Holland Casino should start a dating app. It would just be so much easier. If you've ever been a waitress or a bartender, for anyone who's listening, you kind of understand your clientele, right? Like Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights, you know people are trying to relax from work, from the stress, from whatever it is that they're trying to escape and just have a great time, right? And people drink a lot and then they get drunk and then you have to get the bouncer. And it, like that is, but at the casino, it's gambling. It's an addiction, first of all. And the rules are a little different. It's the way you speak to your guests. It's the way you have to analyze the behavior of your guests. We used to have these or certifications that we would have to take. And ex-cops would give them. This aggression prevention course teaches you a multitude of things. One, the obvious, how to prevent aggression. I was a very quiet girl in the casino, because I just didn't really know what my personality was like. And, you know, if you're too fun or too pretty or too of both of those things, and it's easy for you to just not be liked. So I just needed to be liked and accepted into the team and then, you know, do really good work and kind of go that route. My personality wasn't really sought after as you're the ideal personality to deal with aggression and prevention, right? So you get taught with these actors, they're real actors, about how, let's say, I'll give you an example. You have a guest. He comes in at the beginning of your shift. Your shift is like 8 hours long. By the time it's hour number five, you see that their mood is just deteriorating. They went from greeting you, having, you know, chit chat here and there, to just complete and utter disappointment in themselves. And they end up at the bar because they're hungry. They order a sandwich. Something goes wrong, right? In the kitchen, anybody knows. And they didn't ask for ham, and there's ham on their sandwich. Now they're stomping their hands on the bar. They're getting angry. Their evil vein is popping out. And you have to somehow not just calm them, but find a way to please them without having to call security or your manager on duty. And that takes like 3-4 seconds. And it's one phrase that you could use. And they kind of walk you through how you're able to not just de-escalate the situation before it can even get to a place where you have to press your panic button. And it's really interesting to learn those techniques, but also to find out if you're actually good at them. And what I found is the people that I worked with who had the biggest mouths and, you know, always had like the biggest attitude actually had the hardest time dealing with the aggression, because people like me know that the aggression isn't really about me. It's just being projected at me. And I don't care to throw my imaginary coworker in the kitchen under the bus because nobody knows what they look like. So it's easier for me to say, the kitchen, I'm sorry, man. Like, let me just go and grab you a brand new sandwich and then your drink is on the house and just give me a couple minutes to rectify the situation. And you get back and you put it all down and you're like, listen, if it's not up to par, please let me know and we can find something else on the menu to satisfy your cravings. Just let me know if I can do anything else. It's really hard for someone who's super aggressive to then be extra aggressive to someone who did exactly what they wanted and more, right? So we learned that. You also learn to spot what they, in Dutch, they call smurfing. It's like those little miniature blue guys with the red hats. And what that means is they use small bills, put them into whatever slot machine, and cash out, and then you get like a digital ticket, and then cash out by the register and get bigger bills. So to go from small bills to big bills, right? Anywhere you pay with small bills, they could come to the casino and try to make them into big bills. Or the opposite would be, in Holland, nobody pays with anything larger than a 50 euro bill. So anyone who comes in with like the 100, 200, or the $500 bill trying to break them, that's another red flag. And you have to flag it to security as well, because you can't accept it, right? So you have to be observant to that. And then you also kind of like the regular, this all becomes second nature, by the way, because fun fact, I know a lot of other European casinos are like this as well. And for the Americans, they think this is like the weirdest thing and fair game, because in America, they don't do that. You need a legitimate ID to enter the casino. So like you're registered when you come in. In theory, I could do some form of a background check to make sure of like, hey, have you been here 17 times in the past 10 days? Is this your first time in a year? Like, how frequently do you visit the casino? I could see if, and this is really great as well, is have there been any complaints registered under your name? I'll give you another example. It's Christmas Eve in the restaurant. I'm cute. I got curls. I got my red lipstick. I got a really big red bow tie. It's like the easiest night to be in the casino. Especially in the restaurant, because everyone just comes there to be served. They don't really want to order anything. They just want to have like that Christmas feel. Anyway, there was this old guy and he looked like your grandpa. He probably was in his late 70s with his wife. And I find that men have a really hard time understanding that just because a girl looks pretty and looks very festive, that doesn't really give you the permission to constantly be touching me or asking me inappropriate things. Every time for 4 years that I wear the red lipstick and the red bow tie, because that's what we all would wear if we would serve in the restaurant, because that's the only time you can break protocol for your uniform. I've never been touched more, whether it was my hand or my cheek or my arm or my shoulder, by almost pretty much every man that worked on the floor and was on shift that night. And this one guy, well, old man, grandpa, asks me multiple times if I want to sit on his lap. And he like taps on his lap. And by the third time, you could see his wife telling him to basically stop what he was doing. And when you're working, in my experience, it's like a character. I just need to know like how many cappuccinos am I making? How many coffees? How many don't have sugar? Who wants to pay? Who wants to leave? Who wants to take a break? Like you just need to know a lot because you're really multitasking. And at some point, my superior was like, I heard that this guy, table 10, asked you to sit on his lap. I was like, yeah, this is like the fourth time he asked. We went to security. Of course, he was sitting. It was like a blind spot. We tried to get proof. Finally, we get a camera off of an ATM that was sitting behind him, got proof that he asked that. And eventually security came up and asked me what I wanted to do. And I said, listen, it's just not acceptable that somebody does that. I'm working. This is a service that I'm bringing. I'm not for sale. So I would prefer for you to have a conversation. And it does make me uncomfortable if I ever come to work again. And he was penalized by having a 6-month ban from all the Holland Casino branches. That will go onto your record. So by month 6 and a day, he can re-enter the casino and then you have a profile. This is the other thing I forgot to mention. Your first few days, if not weeks, are the hardest. When you start any job, it's the hardest to just be new because you have to put your brain on 100% and there's just too much. There's just too much information that just needs to be registered. So here's the thing. There's a whole like choreography to how the food and beverage department operates. Table games will always claim that they're the most important because they get the most money in, which is fair. And I don't doubt that. However, food and beverage is 100% needed because people get thirsty when they're losing. So you have table games. And mind you, ours is really small. So we have only one pit. If you go to Amsterdam, they have like 7 pits. Like they have way more. And then you have a watch for table games because each dealer, each croupier at each table, whether it's roulette or punta banco or blackjack, they have a button. It's called the service button. So when they call it, your watch vibrates and then it says table 901. And then you know where to go and you'll be like, hi, what can I get you? And that's how you kind of have to serve table games. Table games, however, also gives you a separate course on understanding the game. So just because you work at a casino doesn't actually entail that you know how these games work, right? So with blackjack, you have every box 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And number 1 is on the left side of the dealer. So you always know you start at box 1. This way, also, when you put it into your handheld and the pantry gets this ticket of this is table 901, the person who runs those drinks knows exactly where they go. You don't have to like scream it out again. Like, who ordered a chocolate milk with whipped cream? And who had a green tea with honey? You know, always the big players, the big scary boys at the blackjack table. And they actually kind of teach you kind of like the flow of the game. So the first box, and then there's the last box. The last box obviously is the most tension. And by the time it gets to box like 5, which is the seat, the attention span is gone. So you have to wait for the game to finish, essentially, to be able to take everybody's order. If you're smart, like I am, I make really great connections with people of each department. And the table games had the best people. Like they were always really fun. They loved their job. They really enjoyed the vibe around the games. So you make eye contact with them and they will help you out by saying like, this lady wants a drink, or they'll, you know, if there's like 7 people, but there's like an audience around it too, it's just like a lot of people that don't hear you because they don't care about you. So it's just easier for you to like make eye contact to be like, help a girl out. And then next thing you know, you have all these drinks, somebody else makes it, somebody else brings it, and you move on. Sometimes you have 5 tables that are just going off on your wrist. And that's when you just need a little bit of backup. Sometimes there was 3 of us running the whole table games pit. And that within itself is its own energy. And it's tense. It's very, very tense. There's another section where it's really tense, but there's like a different sense of energy there. It's all the way in the front or in the back, however you want to look at it, because casinos have no windows, so you won't know. They had these old bingo machines. It's slot machines, but they were old bingo. And people love the bingo. So the diehards would always go in there. You know, at least half of the people, you know exactly what they drink, how they drink it. There's really no way to mess that up. There, it gets really intense because they're the farthest away. So they typically order 2 drinks at a time. because they know for in order for you to get back, it's just going to take really long. So if there's 20 people in the bingo, you could easily be making 35 drinks. When I used to walk in there, I would do like this general announcement that I was there. And it would just be something along the lines of like, good afternoon, we're here to order some more drinks. I'll be coming around shortly, just so they know that like I was there and that they wouldn't get stressed out that I would pass on them. Sometimes you got to go two man strong because it was just too much. And it takes like three people to walk all those drinks back and forth if you want to get through that in like 12 minutes of service, right? We used to have these poker tournaments, and they, especially when I was new, they were the worst. Poker tournaments are, I mean, like, I don't have to tell most of you. I think everybody at this point kind of knows poker, but it's just this excessive, like, trying alpha dominant energy. But all these guys just want to drink like hot tea with lemon or green tea with a bit of honey or a hot chocolate with whipped cream. Like it was never, you know, like heavy whiskeys or, I mean, you couldn't smoke anymore by the time I was working. But at the time you would like smoke cigars at the table and, you know, it's like what you see in the movies is kind of, in, or even in the high roller sections in, you know, casinos in America, like that's what you kind of envision. That's not the case. I was so new at the time when we did the tournaments that my body was on constant fight or flight mode, and I hated it. I hated it because I was the girl that'd be like, hello, good afternoon, would you like to order something? And they would not bite. There was always like one guy that would be like, hey girl, like don't let these guys fool you. And then they would just get into it and they would bicker and they'll be like, stop, man. Like, it's just a girl. Like, she's just going to get your drinks. And they start bickering. And I would hate it so much because when you walk with a tray, and I walked with a big tray on the top of my fingertips, there are just chances that you could drop it. I mean, it's just like a lot that you're transporting. And I would just remember, I'd be like, oh my God, you're going to drop something on the table and then the cards get wet. And like the dealers were always so cool to tell me like, nothing about this is more special than any other day. These guys just think that they're really special, but they're not. This is your regular day. If you drop something, we hold, you know, we just pause the game. Like it's happened before. You know what I mean? Like you're only human. And then lastly, I would say they don't exist anymore, but they used to be called smoke and play. So you would have a section in the casino where you could smoke and play, and it has these glass doors that close and there's no service inside. And every hour, or I think it was like every 2 hours, I don't remember now, you have this little intercom and you press the button to be like, ladies and gentlemen, in 5 minutes, it'll be time for a little service round. And then it goes like, it's like with Gordon Ramsay and his kitchen. There's like this really big red digital clock. And then it says like 15 minutes on the clock. And then you have 15 minutes. And sometimes it would be like four or five of us that'd be standing in front of the glass sliding doors. And like once you go in, everyone is on a mission and has a task. And these guys are the same as the ones in the bingo. They always order at least two drinks. And if food comes, then, you know, that's like a whole other thing. And they're very, very serious. Smoking and playing is very intense. There's a lot of sugar that goes into that place. Just a lot of bickering. It's also kind of like the darkest place in the casino. So it's like a moody 70s vibe almost. So those are like your main sections. Then you have the restaurant and you have the bar. Restaurant can be really intense because you could be, your turnover could be four times in an evening, but you only have like 21 tables. Like it's really small, but sometimes you need, you know, 4 to 5 people to run that place. To have four in the front and one in the back by the window with the kitchen. Like it's a lot of, it's like, it's high pressure. And what's really interesting is when you work each section. So if you work the main floor with like the bingo and all the other slot machines, that's one kind of like mentality. It's kind of like when you're doing dancing, right? Like it's kind of like hip hop. But then when you go to table games, it's like tango, like it's very serious and kind of romantic, but not. And then when you go to the restaurant, it could kind of be like electronic, but you don't really know. Is it like chill electronic? Is it like wild with lights electronic? Like that's kind of the restaurant vibe. And then the bar could go from anywhere from like a chill jazz vibe to hip hop to electronic and then back to ballet, like all in 1 hour. Like it's just everything and nothing in one go. That within itself is a lot of pressure. You have to really know your place. And I think what's really important, something that I learned very early on, because I'm very curious and I always wanted to just get to know people, is getting to know people from each department. So you have services. Services also includes cashier, back office cashier, cleaning, I think. Then you have table games. You have food and beverage. Oh, slot machines. And I think security also falls under services. So security, you have two securities. One is for the outside of the building. Shout out to Wendy. And then you have internal security. So for all the cameras on the gaming floor, including table games, but also security for personnel. I always made sure to get to know everyone because there were times where I would be working behind the bar and I knew like someone was on coke and they had a particular demeanor about themselves where they had no respect for me as a woman. So there was like a lot of like issues there. Sometimes if I could, I would get like a male colleague, but sometimes, you know, I'm what you get. So beggars can't be choosers. You want to order a drink, you got to take what you can get. Luckily, behind the bar, you have panic buttons. When you click a panic button, every manager on duty, every shift leader on duty gets a notification on their phone that they carry around. And the cameras immediately lock into your place. And the head of security gets a notification. That was always really nice because even though there's like 3 feet, a meter in between you and your guest, they ended up constructing the bar in a way that on the right side, it was open. And for anyone who knows who's worked behind a bar, it's always nice to be able to take a step back and all of a sudden there are 6 feet between you and that person. You know, safety comes first always. I have to say, as I'm trying to tell you this, it's a lot of information. I really did learn a lot. Like I really came out of my shell after about 6 months and I really felt super confident in what I was doing. I would always be afraid, right? Always be afraid to make a mistake or look stupid or, you know, drop your tray on someone. And I really learned how good I was at this job in this environment. The other thing I learned was, wow, I really know how to connect across departments. I really know how to speak to people and I really know how to observe them. What I learned how to observe our guests, but I also applied that to my coworkers so that as I became a little bit more seasoned, because I've worked there for almost 4 years, I slowly became closer and closer with my manager. Mind you, my manager was female. She was the only female manager there. And all my shift leaders were female. So we were the only like female ran department, which got, of course, a lot of backlash from every, you know, mediocre man that worked there. And I became close with her in a way that I could tell her, like, why are we doing it this way? You know, if you place X person here and X person there, like that's where they're thriving more. So why not? It's kind of like playing chess meets football. Soccer for Americans. If you kind of understand that game, you can take on any storm that comes your way in the casino. You just need to have a really solid team. As time went on, realized that I could work A, under pressure, B, stay really nice, at least pretend I liked being there. And I think I really cultivated the skill set to become a leader. And that was really a dream of mine for a very long time. So let's say there would be a problem. To be able to fix issues on your own before having to call a superior. I'll give you an example. We had kind of like a credit card. Each employee got a credit card and you had like a budget on there. Every month you got a new budget. You order a sandwich. Your sandwich doesn't come within X amount of minutes, right? Like the rule is kind of like within this window, you should be able to get your sandwich and it shouldn't take longer. Sometimes your sandwich gets lost, right? Here you are 16 minutes later, hungry, annoyed. You lost $2,000 and your fucking sandwich isn't here. And I'm the one who took your order. I have the power with that credit card to say, hey, the kitchen messed up. They lost your sandwich. I'm going to personally make sure that they have it and I'll be bringing it out in the next 6 minutes. Can I get you something to drink on the house? You can use that credit card to pay for it, just, you know, for the backlog of where that one beer went to. So it's not considered stealing. And it kind of like empowers employees to work on that level of service that you're providing on the floor, but that I don't have to call a shift leader away for the most minuscule thing that I can fix on my own, right? I thought, next year, I'm going to apply to become a shift leader. It'll be a step up. I'd be really young. I'd be like 25, 26 years old. Okay. I did actually play the one time and I didn't get it because there was a guy that was applying and they wanted a guy to be the shift leader. Fine. Also, let the record show that he didn't make it. My life till this point was pretty good, right? Like, I was a broke artist and now I was a working artist. I worked, and Holland has this rule where you need to have 5 weeks of paid vacation. It's just what you get, of which 2 of those weeks are back-to-back vacation. So what I would do is I would take my vacation, and wherever I would go, I would take photos. So this way I would still contribute to my portfolio. I would still kind of feed my soul with that artistic juice and then come back to work and feel really refreshed, because working at the casino, as exciting as it may sound, as interesting it may sound, as fun, how different, it's very draining. It's really bad for your health. And most of all, it's really bad for your mental health. I haven't told you any of the stories of where I was crying. So as I'm taking all these breaks to go do photography, I'm also learning that like I could have potential to become a leader, right? And I was like, I think I could make peace with the idea of being like corporate and artistic, and then those, you know, two channels being fluidly in sync with each other. The one really does complement the other. Little did I know that that's not what they had in store for me. The hardest part about being an amazing worker is that when you are promoted, they lose you on the floor, right? The one that they can count on, that when you're on shift, that you got it and they don't have to worry about anything. But my dream really was like, all right, if I could, you know, photograph 6 weeks out of the year and hopefully, you know, continue that journey of becoming an artist, I could do this too, full time. And I really thought that that was going to be my life. I learned a lot about connection and how to professionally tell someone to fuck off. Or I had a lot of rude awakenings that most people don't really care about how you feel because people just care about themselves. I, in the contrary, do really care about how other people feel when they're at work. And if you can contribute to that, that's wonderful. But if you're contributing to that negatively, then, you know, you need a reality check. And so I will always, till the day I die, advocate for that. People should be held accountable for their actions. And if they didn't know that they did that, they should have an opportunity to adjust themselves. But I also found that this idea around nepotism, politics, working in a space where I was one of 3 people that had a color, and where all of upper management were white males, their perspectives are very different. Sometimes I would be told to smile because I was prettier when I smiled. And I would be so snarky that I said, do you know what it's like to be on your heavy day of your period where you feel like your lower body is exploding like a volcano, but you're asking me to smile because I'm here for you? You realize that you have to find a way to play the game without losing yourself. One really vital thing that I learned, actually, it was in an argument with this male superior of mine. And there is this other shift leader who no one really liked because he's a pain in the fucking ass. He's determined to get his way that I was like, I need to know how you do that. So I said, I need to get my right of way. Like, I need to make sure that my point comes across because I know I'm right. And then he told me that it's not about being right. It's about having them acknowledge that you're right. It's nicht gelijk hebben, maar gelijk krijgen. I learned reverse psychology. Always be cool, calm, and collected when you go and confront your bully or someone that you're having a problem with. Make sure they speak first. Have them do their talk first. If they say something that is in a way shifting blame to you, you always counter with, can you help me understand how you're claiming that this is my fault? Lastly, when it's your turn, you speak from how I feel, because you can never argue feeling, and give a play-by-play of their behavior and how that made you feel. 9 out of 10 times you win. Even though my time at the casino came to an abrupt end, I believe in timing. I believe that the universe has a plan, and the plan is to show you your options, and it's up to you what you decide. Life's all about making decisions. And I believe that I wouldn't have become a shift leader. And even if I would have been, it wouldn't have been a leadership position to the team that I knew. I'm completely grateful for all the things that I got to learn from this company, from this team, but specifically these people. I've had a few amazing women who were my leaders, who were my support, who helped me through my hardships, allowing me to evolve into a young professional that I ended up being when I left. And for those who I still speak to, who you know who you are, being able to walk away not only with amazing experiences, I got to walk away knowing that I still have friends from there. And the guests are addicted to coming to the casino, but so are the workers. So there is that secret addiction to everyone really doesn't like working at the casino, but then no one really wants to leave because they love it too much. Thank you to my time, because if it wasn't for working for the casino, if it wasn't for having all my paid vacation, I would have never met my husband. I wouldn't have been able to visit him as much as I did. And the one path really segues into the next. I would say just trust in what the universe has in store for you. It's not about it leading you to it. It's just, it's going to present you with opportunity, and it's up to you whether or not you take it. Thank you so much for tuning in and contributing to a space where we share stories and perspectives. If you like what you hear, please hit that follow button. And your rating and reviews can help get this podcast out there to more listeners. If you'd like to follow along, you can find me at This Is RO Podcast on Instagram. And be sure to check back every Wednesday for new episodes. Much love. Until next time, this is Ro.